It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Wednesday, March 6th. I'm Erin Fulton with Raven News. A jury on Monday made a finding of presumptive death in the case of two Sitka teens lost in a boating accident earlier this winter. Testimony during the trial from Sitka's dive rescue team and the U.S. Coast Guard shed new light on the efforts to recover the pair and why those efforts did not succeed. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Darren Borbridge and Sayer Tuzon were two of the five people aboard a boat which capsized in rough seas off Cass Bay the afternoon of January 9, 2024. The group was returning from a hunting trip on Chichikov Island, about 40 miles northwest of Sitka. A helicopter from Air Station Sitka located the vessel as darkness was falling. A Coast Guard rescue swimmer dropped from the helicopter into the water and assisted in hoisting the three survivors from the overturned hull. Coast Guard video of the incident, shot with night vision, shows the semi-submerged boat rolling in the large swells as the helicopter crew quickly worked to bring the men aboard.
And storm survivor out of the water.
Roger.
Storm survivor coming up.
Okay, so just get the heat running.
Clear back and left.
Back and left. I'm going to, the rotor wash looks good off the boat. I'm going to hold here.
Roger.
The next morning, January 10th, Sitka Dive Rescue located the bodies of Borbridge and Tuzon inside the submerged boat's cabin using a remotely operated vehicle, or ROV. But Dive Rescue Captain Aaron Dupuy told the jury that high seas, winds, and freezing spray prevented their recovery.
Given what we knew about the conditions on scene and where the craft was located at that time, we were fairly reluctant to deploy divers up there without the presence of the salvage company to make the boat secure.
The Coast Guard cutters Kukui and Douglas Denman subsequently joined the effort and attempted to track the capsized boat, which was steadily drifting offshore in seas running between 10 and 15 feet. The Coast Guard's search and rescue program manager, Jennifer Whitcomb, told the Sitka jury what happened next.
Despite our efforts to mark it with a buoy and a flashing light and a transponder, we were unable to relocate it. 2:40 local time a.m. on the morning of January 11th was the last time it was seen. And then we sent a helicopter again out to reacquire it on that first light the morning of the 11th, and they were unable to find it. But at the time, it was 22 miles west of Salisbury Sound.
Two helicopters from Air Station Sitka flew a search pattern on January 11th, joined by two C-130 airplanes from Air Station Kodiak.
Overall, we searched 447 square miles of ocean and located a debris field. There was a deer, a deceased deer that they found, I believe a seat cushion. So that was the level, the sort of size items that they were able to see during these searches.
While the Coast Guard sometimes suspends searches when the victims cannot be found, given the evidence from Sitka Dive Rescue's ROV, the case was closed. The loss of Tuzon and Borbridge was a blow to the entire community of Sitka. Tuzon was going to graduate from high school this year, and jurors learned that Borbridge, just shy of his 19th birthday, was due to become a father. Monday's presumptive death trial was legal closure for the lives of the two young men, and for the many friends and family in the courtroom that morning, it was another chance to mourn them. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A regional land trust is threatening legal action after they say the National Park Service extended part of Sitka's Seawalk into a protected area. And as KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports, the Southeast Alaska Land Trust says the waterfront walkway could spell trouble for the beach ecosystem below once the summer visitor season begins.
Margaret Custer was surprised when she learned last September that the National Park Service was preparing to build a seawalk between Lincoln Street and the tidelands of Crescent Bay because, she says, it's not their land.
That was a real surprise, and we immediately sought to address the issue.
Custer is the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. She says the seawalk encroaches onto a city-owned conservation easement stewarded by the land trust since 2010. Under the terms of the easement, any proposed development has to be approved by the land trust to make sure it aligns with their conservation goals. Custer says this time the land trust wasn't notified or involved in any of the planning. Mary Miller, the superintendent of Sitka National Historical Park, says the new segment doesn't fall within the easement.
We built the seawalk on parkland.
The boundary line in the official record is defined by a 2012 survey. That's the document Custer is referencing. Miller says that in 2015, the Bureau of Land Management redefined that boundary based on improvements to technology and changes to the high tide line.
We did have the Bat Park boundary resurveyed in 2015. And so that's a legal survey that defines the park boundary. And that is the marker for park property and whatever is on the other side of the mean high tide line.
In a November 2023 letter to the National Park Service, an attorney representing the land trust rejected that analysis. Custer says there's a legal process to change a boundary line, and that hasn't happened.
We've told the Park Service on multiple occasions that their 2015 survey, which we just found out about, has not, in fact, changed the boundary line. A survey in itself does not adjudicate a boundary line.
It's an unlikely conflict between two organizations that both want to expand access to nature. Miller says she helped secure the conservation easement back in 2010, and Custer says she supports a seawalk that allows people to enjoy the waterfront. But in this case, Custer says the new structure is likely to have unintended impacts. She's referring to the beds of glistening eelgrass further down the beach that are exposed at low tides. Eelgrass species are protected, and they're important both as habitat for wildlife like herring and because they sequester carbon. Custer says the structure of the seawalk, which includes stairways to direct pedestrians onto the beach, puts those eelgrass beds at risk.
And the land trust is concerned that an increased amount of tourist foot traffic from the seawalk onto the intertidal area, particularly during tourist season, poses a threat to the eelgrass beds and the wildlife that are reliant on those eelgrass beds.
Custer says the land trust has already found patches of trampled eelgrass during the summer season, usually after large groups of cruise ship passengers visit the beach. With Sitka's summer tourist traffic reaching record levels over the past 2 years, Custer says she understands the need for seawalk improvements, but the stairs need to go. Miller says the Park Service is open to meeting with the land trust to resolve Custer's concerns.
So the ideal outcome is that that we get past the misunderstanding or whatever, and continue to support the activities of Seal Trust in preserving the values that the easement was set up for.
Custer says, though, that the National Park Service has not responded to any correspondence from the Land Trust or its lawyers since last November. She says that the trust's standards and practices will require them to take legal action if they can't resolve the problem otherwise.
Right now, we're like a month and change out from the start of the visitor season. And we need to make sure that modifications happen before that.
The city and borough of Sitka declined to comment on the question of the land boundary, citing the possibility of imminent legal action. In the meantime, the new seawalk is open to pedestrians. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
The Juneau Assembly voted Monday to loan the Juneau School District more than $4 million from the city's savings to help address this year's budget deficit. The loan is a major piece in resolving the district's deficit for this year. A finance consultant found in December that incorrect budget estimates had left the district with a $9.5 million shortfall. Members of the public told the assembly Monday night that they wanted the district to be held accountable. Bonnie Webster has three kids in the district.
We're not asking for the loan to be denied. We're just asking for stipulations to be put on it, for some accountability for the Juneau school board.
The ordinance requires the district to start paying back the five-year loan by fiscal year 2026. Assemblymember Paul Kelly suggested requiring that the district publish a budget book. Superintendent Frank Hauser said that's something he intends to do anyway.
My goal is to make sure that we're reinforcing that the Juneau School District is good stewards of the money that's provided to the district, not only from the state, but from the assembly.
The assembly agreed to add the budget book requirement in a 5-3 vote. Member Wade Bryson, who voted in favor, said it will help future school boards and district leaders avoid making the same mistakes.
What has got us in this predicament that we're in right now is the fact that a previous superintendent in a previous budget manner did not create a budget book, and it had errors in it that have cost every student and every teacher in this community untold heartache.
Last month, the school board approved a school closure plan that puts 7th and 8th graders at Thunder Mountain High School and 9th through 12th grades at Juno Douglas High School, Yadak-Kale. The board will discuss next year's budget and staff layoffs at a meeting on Thursday at 5:30 p.m. The assembly also voted to give the district nearly $4 million this year and more than $1.5 million next year for non-instructional costs like maintenance, utilities, and insurance. I'm Erin Fulton, and this has been Raven News.